January the 26th, gigantic six-man tag. A whole lot more we're going to be talking about a little bit later on. The magnificent one, Intercontinental Champion Don Morocco from the great state of Hawaii. And, of course, I've got to bring up the subject of your opponent, the challenger in this particular case, the great Pat Patterson out of San Francisco, California.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. I have a whole recording of Pat Patterson's interviews, a recording of his wrestling matches, a recording of Pat Patterson's most exciting moments, and I play them every night before I go to sleep because they put me to sleep. He is boring. He is boring. Boring. Pat Patterson is probably the most boring person I have ever come across in my life. When I sit here, I want to pick my nose and yawn and just go, oh, he's boring. Isn't he boring? And he wants to be a champion.
Gentlemen, what about his wrestling prowess?
He could, for his what?
Wrestling prowess.
He's so smart.
How about his pros? How about his pros? How about him? You've seen the things he gets behind. You know what? How about him? How about him for being boring? Boring.
Well, gentlemen, I'm sorry. At the risk of being rude, I'm going to have to ask if you would. Thank you very much. Thank you.
We talk wrestling. We ask you what you want to hear. Did you want to hear us for just kind of filler material over the holidays? What would be fun to listen to? And the winner was a trip down memory lane. So we're going to talk about 1997 and wrestling.
And Lodi.
What?
A trip down memory lane.
That's what we're doing, yeah?
And Lodi.
Yeah? We're doing a trip.
1997. We're going to talk about 1997.
No, wait. This is a... I'm just looking at our poll again.
Hmm?
Our informal poll that we had.
Stop looking at my poll.
Turns out what actually won was the promos.
Yeah.
You guys want to hear some more promos edited into the show when I was talking about it like we did once before. Last time we had Owen Hart promos, Bret Hart promos, The Rock, Kurt Angle,
Bad
Rick Flair.
Bad News Brown.
Bad News.
Allen.
Allen. Yeah, Bad News Allen. Yeah, that's right. Lots of great stuff.
Bockwinkle.
Nick Bockwinkle, yeah. So we got lots more great stuff here.
We do.
I just came up with a 10.
Oh, good.
That I got on my list now. So I mean,
is it by Nick Bockwinkle?
This might be spread out into a couple shows because this would take forever. But yeah, I mean, we had
like your mom.
We had some great stuff for that one, and we're gonna do it again. So let's open up. Why don't you get the first promo?
Okay. The first promo I'm going to give to you is a rather famous promo, not a long promo, but one that I give to you with a tear in my eye. And that's the Ric Flair acceptance of
good.
The 1992 Royal Rumble. The winner of the Royal Rumble then getting the WWF title from Jack Tunney in the backstage being issued and his sort of acceptance speech, I guess.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking, because I'm going to have to edit these in. I'm just writing it down. That's an awesome promo.
Even
right.
Perfect.
That line is one of the best. It was just perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's the perfect for right behind him.
He was. And also coupled by the great line of Gene Okerlund going, put that cigarette out.
Yeah.
That was tremendous.
No, that's a good one. I love that one. So what is it you love about that promo? What's the, why picking that one?
The thing is, it capped off, you know, one of, they said probably one of the most star-studded Royal Rumbles of all time. you know, just had, you know, Piper and Undertaker and Hogan and Sid and Flair and Texas Tornado and just all of these stars in it. And then, of course, him coming out on top and just finally getting the WWF title. It was his first WWF title. So it was this Ric Flair, this guy you hear and see for years in the other company, and now he's winning. So it was an emotional thing, and it was, you know, just great.
Yeah, no, it was a great one. All right, let's cut to it.
Yeah.
All right, by virtue of winning the Royal Rumble, we have a brand new World Wrestling Federation champion as the press watches on. At this time, to present the title belt to the new champion, our president, the distinguished Jack Tunney.
Congratulations, Ric Flair, on becoming the undisputed champion of the World Wrestling Federation.
Let me just say, after Vera distorting the belt that proclaimed me the real world champion, I'm going to tell y'all with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment in my life. When you walk around this world and you tell everybody you're number one, the only way you get to stay number one is to be number one. And this is the only title in the wrestling world that makes you number one. When you are the king of the WWF, you rule the world. Think about it like that, Mr. Perfect.
Guys,
the brain. Woo! Woo! Let's give him a big one. Woo! I was never so impressed with anything I've ever seen in all my life. He went out there for over 60 minutes, never took a back step, took it to Hogan, took it to The Undertaker, took it to whoever got in that ring. That's why he is,
hey,
and
Bobby,
you can call him now,
we're
the real world's heavyweight champion.
We're not the kind of guys to say, we told you so, but we told you so.
Okay, very good. Ric Flair, you have made world... Put that cigarette out. You have made World Wrestling Federation history here tonight.
It's the greatest moment of my life.
No, man.
I want to jump. I want to party. But I got to tell you like this. For the Hulk Hogans and the Macho Mans and the Pipers and the Sids, now it's Ric Flair. And y'all pay homage to the man. Woo! I love it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up. We hope you have enjoyed your Royal Rumble. For my broadcast colleagues, Gorilla Monsoon, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Sean Mooney, Mean Gene Okerlund, saying so long from the Knickerbocker Arena in Albany, New York.
All right, we're back on, again, great promo. Hell of a way to open up, especially coming off his just a reappearing on WWE TV here.
That's right.
Recently, a great way to open up the show is to open up with one of the classic Ric Flairs. And, of course, when you're talking Ric Flair, you have thousands to talk about that are classics, and many of those are many more thousands more that people don't even remember. That
okay.
When they hear again, they go, oh, that's a classic, too.
Mm-hmm.
Way up there. You already made me think of a Ric Flair that I could put on here that's not on my list. I'm going to write it down in case I decide to put it in, actually.
So now you have 11?
Now I have 11.
Oh, okay. So let's pare that back down to 10. Pick one.
All right, we're going to open up. You're going to open up with Ric Flair. What the hell? I'll go with Hulk Hogan. We've talked about this before, how this is his best promo. It's not a long promo. WrestleMania 4. Now, I could, of course, just get you to word for word repeat it.
Yes.
Which is what you did in the last promo show. You basically said the promo,
yo,
and then we cut to it.
Oh, yeah.
You remember them all. So we'll try not to do that so much this time, because otherwise, what's the point? We get a little repetitive.
35 full bum, Andre. One long year, and our time has come.
Shut up.
No more.
Shut up! We're cutting to that now!
No blemishes in the Hulkster, brother.
All right, over the last couple of months, it has been very difficult for me to introduce this man without using World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan here at WrestleMania 4 this afternoon. You've got the opportunity to change that.
Oh, yeah, it's been hard to live with, man. Fee, fi, fo, fum, Andre. One long year, and your time has come, man. No marks, no scars, no blemishes on the Hulkster, brother. But inside, man, I've been scarred for one long year. Everywhere I go, man. man. All the little hoaxers asked me, is there any truth to the fact that there was a controversial count? Hoaxer, did you really get him over your head? Did you really beat the Giants? Well, today, man, in WrestleMania 4, we're going to wipe all that controversy out. Andre the Giant, in the second round, when you're fresh as a daisy, with the whole world watching, I'm going to prove, brother, that I can beat you anywhere, anytime. And all my Hulkamaniacs, they're going to feel it too.
Speaking of the Hulkamaniacs, Hulk Hogan, we have seen him here in Atlantic City, and I know millions others are watching very intently all around the world.
But if you looked in their eyes, man, have you seen the fear in all those little Hulksters? They realize that when I get Andre the Giant cinched up in the launch position, when I slam him through the Trump Plaza, brother, from New York down to Tampa, Florida, the fault line is going to break off. And as Andre the Giant falls into the ocean, as my next two opponents fall to the ocean floor and I pin them, so will Donald Trump and all the Hulkamaniacs. But as Donald Trump hangs onto the top of the Trump Plaza with his family under his other arm, as they sink to the bottom of the sea, thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac. He'll know enough to let go of his materialistic possessions, hang on to the wife and kids, dog paddle with his life all the way to safety. But Donald, if something happens, you run out of gas, and all those little Hulkamaniacs run out of gas, just hang on to the largest back in the world, and I'll dog paddle us, backstroke all of us to safety.
Oh, and thank you, Hulk Hogan. Let's get back to action. Wow.
All right, that was excellent. I love that.
I think that is Hulk Hogan's best promo of his career.
Yes.
So, I mean, and we talked about it being the best promo of his career before. So
yeah.
Why the hell not? I mean, we didn't throw it in last time, amazingly.
I know. And then when the best was at the end, like, he's, like, running out of breath.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Donald, when I get you, just hard. Oh,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
Just back in the world. And I'll dog paddle you to safety. And tremendous. But,
tremendous.
It really is. It's my turn.
It's your turn.
Now, so we're in the heels of some of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
And we're going to go, and I've mentioned this before, that this is probably my all-time favorite Raw that come from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, in July of 1997, or June 1997, summer of 97, anyway. And Shawn Michaels comes out to, of course, a chorus of boos, but he cuts one of his, just a tremendous, tremendous promo. Just keep getting, they're chanting, like, I think they're chanting faggot at him at one point. He's like,
they were, yeah.
He's like, you talking to me? Oh, no, you're not talking to me. You can't be talking to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, gets the local heat, and the whole point of the promo is to announce that he was going to be the special referee at SummerSlam, Heart and Soul, with Undertaker and Bret Hart, and I will be the special referee. You know, he's pointing at himself.
But then you aren't going to tell the whole promo again.
I didn't. I didn't even talk about the little Canadian army man. Or the gay joke that he tells. You know. We'll free your fairies, we'll free your heterosexuals. We're good with everybody. Again, this was 19. This was 15 years ago.
15.
What happened on Raw last week? Don't remember.
Don't remember.
But yeah, so that's it. We did Flair, we did Hogan, and now we're gonna do Shawn Michaels.
All right, I'm good with that. Let's go.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the most charismatic, the greatest athlete perhaps in the entire history. gentlemen, the stage is yours, and we're ready to hear it.
Well, I got a lot of things on my mind, George Brooks. First and foremost, I'd like to address how unappreciative the Canadians are to the U.S. people. I can remember sitting home Christmas morning, my parents giving me some little Canadian Army men, and they all came out like this. And of course, I can't pass this one up. Everybody knows why the U.S. keeps from falling into the ocean, because Canada sucks.
Go just a little too far.
But now that I've had my fun, I have to come out here and let every one of you know that the Heartbreak Kid. The Undertaker and Bret the Hitman Hart
What Bret Hart feels is not my concern. You want to feel something, right? Feel this. But the WWF officials have made it clear to me that if I do not call the match down the middle, if I lean towards the Undertaker's side, I also will not be able to wrestle in the United States. So, if I don't call the match down the middle, I'm going to have to move up here with the rest of you and wrestle in front of you every day of my life. Right out the house, right next to the hitman, and live in Canada for the rest of my life. But,
that'd be horrible.
But, Undertaker, and all you distinguished people of Canada, I want you to know, and I want Bret Hart to know. Bret, buddy, pal of mine, if you can't trust Shawn Michaels, who can you trust?
I'll tell you what, that young man has a lot of courage coming out here. Next thing, what he said, but he is the best referee, but with the caveat that if he does favor the Undertaker, he too may not wrestle in the United States ever again. To the Undertaker, he's gone for good.
All right, awesome. Awesome. And that's, what I like so far is these ones are easy for me to find, too, and put in there.
Yes.
I won't have much trouble there, but that's good. Let's take a left turn, though, because we did Flair, Hogan, Michaels. Let's take a left turn into a great promo, more recent, and somebody who's, I think, a very good talker, but people never really realized how good a talker he was.
Ricardo.
No. But somebody who is, especially when he was at his most intense, could always be very good, and I don't think he was ever more intense or better than he was right here. When ECW returned in, I think it was 2005, 2006, when was it? That it returned to TV?
Returned to TV.
Returned to TV.
I want to say it was like 2006, 2007, something like that.
Yeah, Rhino cuts a promo to open up an episode of TNA Impact where he takes, he had both the TV title and he had the world title. And he takes these and he throws them in the trash can and lights it on fire.
Yeah, like a hobo thing, yeah.
And he talks about this, how this is the real championship, and here's what you're doing to ECW. And he was prophetic, because that was exactly what they did to it. But he was very, very passionate. It isn't long, but he was great and had a lot of momentum coming out of it for a couple of weeks. And of course, they didn't use him.
No, and one of the things though that was great about that promo is with those arms of his that he was actually able to throw the title belt into the trash can, like, and he's got those.
This is a video. This is not a video.
He's got those T-Rex arms right now.
Yeah. Well, he threw him in with his teeth, didn't he?
I think so.
Either way, great promo. Either way,
great promo.
Here's what we're going to.
I'm sick and tired of people trying to recreate the past. I'm sick and tired of people trying to resurrect what is dead. Look around here in TNA. You've got Shane Douglas. You've got Raven. You've got Team 3D. And you've got myself. That was the heart and soul of ECW. ECW is dead. And the only thing that is left is a proper burial. Oh, you thought I was done? You thought I was done? No, I take things to the extreme. Boys and girls, we're gonna have a little fire tonight. See, I'm sick and tired of Vince McMahon profiting off of our blood, sweat, and tears. Not anymore. Not anymore. Because death to ECW Long live TNA. And it seems like everybody wants to go out and throw an open challenge. Well, I've got an extreme challenge for you. I've got an extreme challenge. It doesn't matter who you work for, what company, whether it's a four-sided ring, six-sided, or eight-sided. Bring your ass to the Impact Zone and face me face to face, because the end result is always the same. Gore! 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 Tonight, it came from the heart. I meant everything I said. I signed that contract with TNA more than 2 weeks ago. But I felt it would be appropriate to announce it right here in Philly. A place where I got my start. A place where I started to make a difference in pro wrestling. But that's my past. My past is a man that unified two titles. A man that became a champion in another promotion. A man that was fired. A man that thought his career was done. But last year, TNA gave me an opportunity. The fans didn't forget about me, and I made a difference this past year. I became the War Machine. I won the NWA World Heavyweight title. What do? I had a decision. I made that decision. I signed with TNA. Why? Because they're the future of pro wrestling. They don't hand you a piece of paper and say, read from this. No, they say, here's the mic. Go out there and make a difference. There's the ring. Go out there and kick some ass. And that's what Rhino does best. Here in Philly, I shared something so special that I'll remember for the rest of my life. You know what? The next year, I'm going to make gold. I will become NWA Heavyweight Champion. I don't care who's the champion. I want to be part of a company that's going to make a difference in wrestling, that's going to head towards the future. I want a company that's going to stand behind me. Oh, yeah, if I knock over a flower pot, don't fire me. F*** you for firing me. The same motherfucker that fired me last year wanted to hire me this year. You know what? I said, F*** you. Go straight to hell. You would have made me wealthy. I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it to make a difference. The money's just icing on the cake. I'm here to kick some ass and not be told what to do. I tell mother what to do. And you know what? I'm part of TNA because they will make a difference in wrestling. They will satisfy the fans' hunger for good wrestling. The hunger that the fans want fuels me, the War Machine. When I go out in that ring, I know TNA is the future of wrestling. I know that I can go out there and do whatever the hell I want. And I know that I'm a man when I set foot in that ring. I'm a man. I'm not a piece of actor, because that's not who I am. I'm a wrestler. I'm insane. I'm crazy. I'm the future of TNA.
All right. Yeah. So we've got all the greats now. Flair, Hogan, Shawn Michaels, Rhino. HBK going to be hunting Rhino. I believe on a McMillan River rafting adventure.
But world's most dangerous man.
Yes.
Stumpy.
Where's Stumpy?
You guys got to go back to our best of and listen to that.
Yes. But let's go now. If we're going to go off the beaten path a little bit, I've got one that's kind of a little bit unique, I guess, because I'm going to consider this a promo in that I was thoroughly entertained by this, and it is something that I think people should hear. But this is, I think people need to hear John Bradshaw Layfield induct Ron Simmons into the WWE Hall of Fame.
I'm good with that one. Yeah, JBL's Ron Simmons speech.
It was fucking fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
So.
And remember, a speechwriter offered to write it for him first.
Yes, yes. Someone handed him his script and said, this is what we've come up with for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no. Well, the thing is, JBL's a tremendous talker. He is very funny. He is very bright. Mm-hmm. And he is, I mean, that is his best friend, is the right guy to induct him. And it comes across perfectly.
Exactly.
Much like when Hunter inducted Sean, and it was just right, you know, and just perfect, and he got everything about it.
Yeah,
this is much that same type of moment.
Oh yeah, exactly. So all right, well, let's go to that.
That's right, former WWE champion John Bradshaw Layfield, JBL.
Last night, we had a Hall of Fame reception, and a writer came up to me and said, I'm the one that's supposed to help you with your speech tomorrow. Since we are no longer in the Attitude Era, I cannot repeat to you what I said to that young man, but I can tell you this. The day that I need a writer to talk about the best friend I ever had on this planet, my former tag team partner, is the day you can put me in the ground. Because Ron Simmons' induction speech pretty much writes itself. Bobby Bowden, the coach of Florida State, where Ron was a three-time All-American, said that Ron Simmons was the most impactful player he had ever coached. The man who coached hundreds of college players, including primetime Deion Sanders. Barry Switzer, before the Orange Bowl, they asked him, they said, what do you have to do to beat Florida State? And he said one thing. We got to figure out how to block Ron Simmons. They never did. Three-time All-American, Orange Bowl Hall of Fame, College Football Hall of Fame, Jersey retired at Florida State long before a boy named Sue at Nebraska became runner-up for the Heisman Trophy. Ron Simmons became what most people recognize as the greatest nose tackle to ever play the game of college football and become a runner-up himself for the Heisman Trophy. And if you want to talk about big man on campus, I want you to think about the kid who came out of Warner Robins High School, who was All-State, who was Lineman of the Year, who was an All-American in high school when he drove around Tallahassee in his skin-tight jeans and his snakeskin boots in a brand new Trans Am with his picture painted on the hood. That's a true story. He wrecked it and got another Trans Am with his picture painted on the hood. When he went to the Cleveland Browns, Lyle Alzado bench pressed 225 43 times. People thought that was the most amazing thing they had ever seen. This year, at the NFL Combine, a young man bench pressed it 44 times. Ron Simmons bench pressed 225 47 times. When you talk about man, if Ron Simmons' picture isn't in your dictionary, you got the wrong dictionary. When he walked into the WWE and he had a blue helmet with him, Stone Cold Steve Austin looked at him and said, that is the only person that can walk in this building with a blue helmet and nobody is going to say anything whatsoever. But Ron's biggest legacy came not in sports and not just in wrestling, but in breaking down barriers. You see, in every genre, in every sport, in every business, somebody has to break down barriers, whether they are ethnic, whether they are gender, whether they are racial, but whatever they are. And Ron Simmons, in the old Jim Crow WCW days, didn't just break down a barrier, he shattered it. On August 2nd, 1992, Ron Simmons became the first African-American heavyweight champion. You see, if there hadn't been a Teddy Rhodes, there wouldn't have been a Lee Elder. If there hadn't have been a Lee Elder, there wouldn't have been a Tiger Woods. If there hadn't been a Satchel Paige, there wouldn't have been a Jackie Robinson. If there hadn't been a Jackie Robinson, there wouldn't have been a Hank Aaron. If there hadn't have been a Big Cat, there wouldn't have been a Ron Simmons. And if there wouldn't have been a Ron Simmons, there wouldn't have been The Rock. There wouldn't have been Booker T. There wouldn't have been Mark Henry. And all you wonderful, extremely talented athletes now have no barrier in front of you right now because a man of character and a man of integrity. Because when you break through barriers, you can't be equal. You have to be better than the person that stuck that barrier up to begin with. That was Ron Simmons. Years later in the APA, we were the first really successful tag team that mixed ethnicities and race. You see, there were the Dudleys, our good friends in ECW, who had very successful, but in WCW and WWE, it did not happen. Blacks were with blacks. Cowboys were with cowboys. Briscoes were with Briscoes. And thank God there was only two Briscoes. And Ron and I became the APA. And since I am not allowed to curse tonight, I cannot tell you what I thought about the former head of creative. But that guy wanted to, well, I'll tell you one thing, the guy went to WCW and they went bankrupt. So it tells you what a genius he was. But he wanted to make something out of race. He wanted to make it a big deal that Ron and I, one was black and one was white. And Ron said, no, absolutely not. This is not about race. This is about friendship. We're simply friends. Nothing more. And because of that, Ron stopped it. And we were friends. I can tell you in my whole life, there has never been a person. It's been a bigger influence on me than Ron Simmons. I figured out one time we rode between 800 and 1,000 miles a week, week after week, month after month, year after year. We rode together in a Ford Lumina hundreds of thousands of miles. And if you ever want to do a reality show, forget the Diva reality show, forget WWE Legend, somehow find a Stephen Hawking time machine, get you a high-def camera, go back to that Ford Lumina, and get our two traveling companions, that peanut-headed George Jefferson wannabe Theodore Rufus Long, who rode with us those hundreds of thousands of miles, and Charles the Wright Godfather. Now think about that car. Ron Simmons was a trailblazer. Godfather was just a blazer. We were going to rat-infested hotels, and I have no idea how so many rats got in hotels. For those of you that are down here, ask one of the old guys. They will explain that to you later. Ron Simmons and I wrestled one time during the Attitude Era, and I understand we had a loaded card. I understand it was a different era. But in a show that drew an 8.0, Ron Simmons and I, against each other, were the highest rated regular quarter hour of an 8.6. And I want to tell you something, and I'd like to tell all you young guys down here, when one of you children put up an 8.6 against the networks, I would appreciate it if somebody would tweet me. That car that we rode in was four guys who just loved this business. We loved everything about this business. We loved it. And I can't tell you, I don't think any of the stories that happened in that car. But I can tell you the time that Mark Henry, the world's strongest man, threw some chicken bones at us in Nova Scotia, and we spent the next 30 minutes pushing him down the road going 95 plus miles an hour. Taka Michinoku was in the back seat. He never learned a word of English, but in that half hour, he found God. There was the time that Teddy Long got stopped for a felony of driving while black in Kentucky. And as this redneck Barney Fife cop comes sauntering up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I really wanted to look out the window and say, excuse me, they're holding me hostage. But I really figured this man might shoot all of us and take our beer. And I was not willing to pay that price. There was the time that Godfather was driving us to a show with the Rosemont and turned into a hotel lobby. There is nothing more I can tell you about that story. Oh, I wish this wasn't edited. I work with underprivileged kids in Bermuda. They love when I tell stories about travel, and they love when I tell stories about standing in Nelson Mandela's cell. But the one thing they love is when I tell stories about Ron Simmons, about a kid that grew up without any family support and became the first black heavyweight champion, about a kid that grew up without any family, without any money, and became a runner-up for the Heisman Trophy, who said, you know what, the heck with you, life, I'm getting mine. Ron Simmons is influencing kids to this day, not because of who he was, but because of who he is. He did great things in his life, and he was much bigger than the APA, but I can tell you I wasn't. The greatest thing that ever happened to me in this life, in this career, was one thing, and that was Ron Simmons. When he was the best man at my wedding, he gave a best man speech that he got a standing ovation for, and he said at the end of it, he said, "You pledge to your wife that till death do you part." So, in our friendship, till death do we part. I can tell you right now, till death do we part. I've never done anything greater than this, and I doubt I ever will, but I want you to welcome the...
Okay, cool. That's a great one. So, JBL, we got back to a guy, I think, probably not talked about it for how great a talker he is enough, maybe because, you know what, he didn't get a chance to really talk much until towards the end of his career.
Honest
with you. That's kind of, I think, what hurts him. I'm going to go to somebody who's definitely a great talker. I think everybody knows it, but I think just because this is so long ago, we're going to go back, you know, we've gone kind of recent now.
Yeah.
Way back in the time.
All the way to Hillbilly Jim?
No, back further.
Oh. Further?
Yeah.
Uncle
even
Elmer?
Further. No, even further than that.
Harley Davidson.
Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler.
Yes.
Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler feud in the early 80s that got national press, even though it was a territorial feud because, of course, Kaufman was a TV star and, you know, they took the angle to Letterman and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is unbelievable. And the thing is, people don't realize how long it went on for, and it got so much heat. Andy Kaufman...
Well, and it played itself out, though, too.
It did play itself out, but Andy Kaufman gets the best natural heel heat of anyone basically out there, better than anybody gets today, wherever they still practice. He just really got underneath the skin's fans. You know, I'm from Hollywood, and you're, you know, the redneck fans, right?
Yeah.
But it was real.
I'm just a dumb hick from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, exactly. And he really got it. So I'm going to use the promo. I think it's probably about 6 minutes, and it's before their final ever match, where he just takes the microphone and he's walking around ringside. And, I think his manager, Jimmy the Mouse of the South, Hart, is still there.
Yeah.
And he's just walking up and down the aisles and just aggravating the fans. And probably not going to be the best audio quality because it's put so long ago there, but it's incredible just to hear him get to these fans just before the last match. It's like this is what he saved up because this is the last time he's going to get a chance to do this because this is the end.
Yeah.
And he just completely commands the crowd and it's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. I know a lot of you don't like me, but I'm going to give you a little present tonight. Because I'm from Hollywood and I'm in show business, and I got paid a lot of money to do what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to sing you a little song. Oh, I'm the king. Oh, I'm the king. I'm the new king of Memphis, Tennessee. I knocked that lawyer out last week. I'm going to knock her out again. Yeah, I'm the king of Tennessee. I'm the king of wrestling, Tennessee. I knocked that lawyer out. I'm going to knock him out again. Yeah, I'm going to knock you to the bottom. Yeah, yeah.
Hysterical ranting and
outside. Jimmy Hart feeding pearls of wisdom into his ear. There's the bell, and we're off and running for round number one. Speaking of running, there goes Crawford. Comedian. I think his tights are now ready to face the ordeal, but whether they're ready for Lawler or not, we'll find out. Coughlin saying, stay in your corner while I get ready for you. That makes it about it.
That really was great. You know, it's, no, and again, it's, I had Andy Kaufman written down on my, in my mind here, like, you know, you're talking about, you were giving me a shit for not really preparing, but I said I got a million of them, like, in my head that I can pull out if you go, but, and Andy Kaufman
sometimes
was one of them.
Sometimes you don't do the preparation that I do on these things,
I'm horrible, I'm an on-the-fly guy, and you're just always got your notes and you, everything, it's...
Well, except for lately, when you show up with the news.
Except, yeah.
And I go, what the fuck happened?
Except for the last year, except for that.
But on these, yeah, I've spent a lot of time trying to come up with these best albums.
But that one is great. And then you said it was 6 minutes. Another one that may rival that in terms of length is My Penis. But other than that, I think that I keep going back to a great year.
That makes no sense. Hmm? Your penis rivals that in length? Six minutes,
yeah.
Just to see the whole thing?
Just to get warmed up.
All right, go on.
What were we talking about again?
He's doing their next promo.
My penis. No.
You're going to ask.
Yeah. 1997 was a great year in professional wrestling for the WWE.
Heard.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this trip down memory lane on it.
Another fella.
And Loki.
Loki. And what? Loki.
Loki. Loki, whatever.
Loki's fucking Harry Smith. Mick Foley. The three faces of Foley.
Oh, yeah.
Sit-down interviews with JR. There were three of them where you just really got into Mick Foley's head.
They're so good.
And they're just so good, and it turned him babyface.
Yeah.
These promos.
Which was the intention.
Yes, it was. It was. And then you start to get the entertaining moments of, you know, afterwards when Z was trying to get Steve Austin to be, you know, there was a tournament and Austin needed to pick a partner, right? And Mankind was having Pick Me Steve had a sign around his neck.
Well, I mean, and I think right after this is when he's taking on, I mean, as the King of the Ring, right? It was right
yeah,
after
with Hunter.
This,
yeah,
right
when Hunter
wins it. And then you had the SummerSlam feud and, you know, the Falls Count Anywhere match here in Calgary.
Exactly. You did the feud with Hunter and then it merged in. But I mean, it
merged into the stuff with Austin after that. Yeah,
that's right. But those three sitting and just, you know, even I just remember the beginning of the third one when all he sits back and he goes, I made a movie, you know, and then just, you know, it talks about him jumping off the roof and
him
and,
wanting
you know,
to be
Shawn Michaels. And
that's who he thought he would be when he was a kid and he thought about being a wrestler.
Yeah.
And it was the character, you know, dude loved that, and that's where he introduced that.
Yeah.
No, this is great stuff. The psychology behind this is so amazing. And you say it turned a baby face, but it also showcases why he was such a great heel at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I love about this.
Yes. This actually, quite frankly, if you want to talk about 1997 and fast forward 15 years later today, this is why Mick Foley worked. And Mankind worked, and AJ doesn't.
Yeah.
Because AJ, it's crazy, and she starts to go, but there's not the depth to it.
No.
There's not the person behind it that can make that work.
No.
Whereas Mankind was a crazy guy ripping out his hair and you know, squealing like a pig and such, but was able to give reasons why. So let's just hit all three of these interviews.
Let's do it.
deranged. That's the word most often used to describe mankind. The path of carnage he has carved through the World Wrestling Federation has made mankind one of the most feared and hated superstars in the WWF. What makes a man love pain so much that he willingly mutilates his own body? Over the next few weeks, I'm going to take you on a different kind of odyssey. A 26-year journey of a young boy named Mick Foley. Boyhood dreams turned into a living hell.
What do you think the biggest misconceptions are that the WWF fans have as it relates to mankind?
That I'm a bad person. Jimmy, there's plenty of good reasons to hate me. I just don't want people to hate me for untruths and partial truths and rumors. You see, when I was a kid, I played cowboys and Indians. Now, who were the good guys? The cowboys coming over the hill to rape, pillage innocent women and children? I was always the Indian, Jimmy. I always stood for the underdog. That makes me a bad person, standing up for what I believe in, and I guess you got me dead to rights. I'm a bad man.
Mick Foley wasn't like the other boys. He embraced physical pain as friend and companion.
I was 8 years old at Minnesaukee Elementary School playing a game of kill the guy with the ball, which may even be an Olympic sport these days. And in chasing one of the other students, I made a leap for his legs, and the back of his foot kicked me in the lip. And I didn't know what happened. I knew it hurt, Jimmy. I knew it hurt bad. But all of a sudden, people started looking at me in a different way, like there was something wrong with me. I looked down at my Chicago Bears back in the days when they were 2-12 in the waning days of Dick Butkus. And my Chicago Bears white sweatshirt had suddenly turned red. And children were running from me, scared. I was bleeding. I was in pain. And I was loving it. Because I felt like I'd finally found something in my life that I could do better than everybody else. Handle pain. Someone said, "Oh, that's just vampire blood," and then saw the open wound from which the blood was flowing. I've still got that shirt, Jimmy, and I remember thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I could do something in my life where I could do this all the time? Get that attention every night. Stockbrokers can't do it. Teachers can't do it. The President of the United States can't bleed for a living, but pro wrestlers can. It's the first time that I realized that I had a calling in my life, and I followed it right down the line. That's all I wanted to do. My brother and I watched them all. Chief J. Strongbow, Bruno Sammartino, the Valiant Brothers, that's what we wanted to be. Then I broke his nose by backdropping him into his bedroom wall, and Mom said, "No more wrestling." But she didn't say no more dreaming.
Mick Foley continued to pursue his dream, but he paid a heavy price. The emotional scars of a strange childhood are still evident.
You know, I'm going to tell my son, when he gets to be 15, not to be the guy who eats strange things. I never exactly brought it upon myself. Other people in their cliques, for lack of a better word, they would gang up on me because I was different, because I acted different, looked different. They were throwing worms at me, Jimmy. Little wriggly worms they were throwing at me. Bending down in athletic class, doing my hurdler stretch, and there was a bombardment of worms being thrown at me. So what do you do to retaliate? You throw the worm back? Seven or eight people, it's not the fact they were hurting me, they were wounding my pride. They were looking at me like I was garbage. So I picked up the largest specimen, Jimmy, and I sucked it down to show them that their attempts to hurt my pride would not be successful. I thought, Jimmy, that I'd shown them. But then, sure enough, the story became exaggerated, as everything in life does, and it no longer became, well, Mickey Foley ate one worm because some kids were picking on him. It became Mickey Foley eats a plate full of worms every day. Do you think I got many dates after that, Jimmy?
Probably not.
Do you think girls wanted to kiss a boy who had worms on his breath? I'm a good kisser, but I never got the chance to show it. What am I going to practice on myself, Jimmy? I never had the chance to show the world that I could love and could be loved, because they ruled me out because I had a strange appetite for strange things. I'm not going to say I didn't accept money to eat other strange things, but the fact is the damage had been done, and I went through my entire high school days without date number one. You don't think that scarred my soul? Well, maybe you're not looking deep enough.
Next week, we'll look deep into mankind's scarred soul. He'll share his unfulfilled boyhood dream of becoming Dude Love, a wrestler not unlike Shawn Michaels. Also, Mick Foley's disturbing psychological evolution, including his years as Cactus Jack.
I was a deathmatch champion, and I had the ability to make people sick.
There is no simple explanation for why a man becomes deranged. From childhood, Mickey Foley's affection for pain made him different. Despite coming from a loving and caring household, he was not at home. Mickey Foley was searching for a place to belong.
It was 1983, and upstate New York, with its endless rolling fields, might be a nice place for a lot of boys, but not when Jimmy Snuka and Don Morocco were in a cage in October in Madison Square Garden. That's where I wanted to be. I didn't want to ride horses along a field. I didn't want to fish for trout in a stream. I wanted to be where the blood and guts were, Jimmy. So I put out my thumb, Jimmy, and it took 16 or 17 hours, but I made my way to the garden. It took just about all the money I had in the world, but I got a front row seat. And I saw the move that would change my life. And Jimmy Snuka came off the top of the cage, and I saw people stand up. And I saw people cheer. And I know I wasn't the only person whose life was changed in that arena. And I realized, Jimmy, that I wanted to do the same thing. I wanted to hear people cheer for me because of some act of bravery that I committed. I wanted to hear, see people's emotions. I wanted to see children cry out of love for me, for the things I could do inside a ring. That's my first time in Madison Square Garden, and my parents weren't there. I did it just like I've done just about everything else in my life, all by myself.
That's when Mickey Foley developed an alter ego, a superstar with the athleticism of Jimmy Snuka and the sex appeal he so desperately wanted in high school.
I made a movie when I was 18 about myself, maybe as a type of escape, where I was a wrestler. And it's strange, the first time I ever met Shawn Michaels, you know him?
Oh, yeah. Very well.
He looked at my scarred and battered body. He didn't know me, but he knew the legend of who I was before. And he said, "Is this the way you always envisioned yourself?" Looking somewhat down on me. And I said, "No, you know, the strange thing is I always imagine myself being you." And he said, "You mean the champ?" I said, "No, I mean the girls, the jewelry, the tattoos, the love." So in my movie, I was not Mick Foley. I sure as hell wasn't Mankind. I was Dude Love.
We are going to tear this rotten apple right down to its stinking New York core. And while we're here for only one reason. One reason only. Fame, honor, fortune, glory, to destroy and to take that WWF championship belt, that World Wrestling Federation belt.
And during the course of the movie, dating back to my experience in Madison Square Garden, I decided I was going to do something heroic. I was going to do something to make people cheer for me. So I ascended up onto my friend's roof, and I dove off.
At that time, love must be 50, 60, 70 feet in the air.
Dude, love!
Oh, unbelievable!
ironically, Dude Love gave Mick Foley his first break. It became an underground hit and somehow wound up in the hands of wrestling great Dominic DiNucci. DiNucci admired Mick's guts more than his skill and took him under his wing. Every weekend, for the next 2 years, Mick traveled 800 miles round trip, eating and sleeping in the back seat of his 79 Ford Fairmont, still hoping to realize his dream.
I knew I wasn't ready to be Dude Love yet. Never wanted to be Cactus Jack. I figured here is a horrible name for a horrible wrestler. And by golly, as soon as I get the ability, then I'll get that heart-shaped tattoo on my chest. I'll put those earrings in, and I'm going to get the girls. And it never really worked out that way, did it, Jimmy?
Not quite.
I guess nature didn't cooperate with me. Cactus Jack was supposed to be around for 3 months. He stayed for 11 years.
Next week, Mickey Foley becomes Cactus Jack. 11 years in a sadistic subculture of nails, barbed wire, and bombs. A lost soul still searching for a place to belong.
And I walked out the first time I saw barbed wire strung up in place of ring ropes. And I said, I'm finally home. Mrs. Foley's little boy is finally home.
The evolution of mankind. What fuels the insanity? So far, we've explored the tormented youth of Mick Foley, and we've seen his bizarre underground home video. Tonight, we'll explore the formative years of his wrestling career, one that began with a brief stint in the WWF as the unheralded Jack Foley in 1986. But despite performing before several organizations, success wasn't achieved until Mick Foley unveiled his dark alter ego, the sadistic Cactus Jack.
What made Cactus Jack different? Because he just wanted it a little bit more. He was willing to go the extra length. He was willing to sleep in a filthy car in order to achieve his dream. He was willing to forego barbed romantic relationships to be the best. He was somebody in an era of bodybuilder physiques who carved out his own niche, said, I'm going to make it on my own style. Said, no one else is going to tell me what to do. I'm not going to dye my hair. I'm going to be exactly who I am, and I'm going to do it my way.
As the legend of Cactus Jack grew, so too did his affinity for pain. Concerned independent promoters soon asked him to tame his increasingly brutal behavior. But Mick Foley always did things his way. Instead of compromise, he left the United States to seek satisfaction in a bizarre, sadistic wrestling subculture in Japan.
And I'd heard rumor about these horrible matches that took place. And I didn't care. As far as I was concerned, this was my destiny. And I walked out the first time I saw barbed wire strung up in place of ring ropes. And I said, I'm finally home. Mrs. Foley's little boy is finally home. And Jimmy, I kid you not when I say it didn't matter the match. I wrestled on beds of nails. I wrestled on 10,000 thumbtacks. I wrestled on C4 explosives. And the funny thing was, it didn't matter how mutilated I was physically, I healed myself spiritually. Because for the first time, I was respected. I'll go so far to say I was loved. People lined up and chanted my name, Cactus Jack, Cactus Jack. They sure as hell didn't line up like they do here to spit on me, to pee in paper cups and pour it on me. I had my dignity, and I'm not sure I've got it anymore.
Obviously, these matches in Japan were bizarre. They were dangerous, career-threatening. If I'm not mistaken, I see you've been rubbing your arm there a lot since we've been talking. Very significant scars there. Did those occur in one of those matches in Japan you're talking about?
He shall strip his sleeve and show his scars and say these wounds I had at St. Crispin's Day. And the good story shall be told from father to his son. For we shall be remembered, we few, we happy few, we brothers. For he who sheds his blood with me today shall be my brother. It's kind of touching, isn't it?
Oh, no Shakespeare. You're very well read, aren't you?
You see, Jimmy, it shows me that I'm not alone. There's nothing freaky about being proud. When I look in the mirror, you know what I see?
I'd be afraid to guess. I don't really know.
I see a life fulfilled. I see a road map of everywhere I've been. I just have to look and say, Tokyo, Japan. Munich, Germany. Louisville, Kentucky. And everywhere in between.
The nomadic reign of Cactus Jack lasted nearly 11 years, but his fondest memory occurred aboard a commercial airliner, where his battle-ravaged body made an indelible impression on a fellow passenger.
I'm a coach-class person, but they took one look at my wounded face, my scarred and battered arm, my stitched head, my stitched hand, my stitched ear, and they bumped me up. The woman sitting next to me didn't quite understand that. She spent double the money and ended up moving back to coach to get away from me. She felt that much of me that she couldn't stand to be around me. And not a day goes by when I don't think of her face drifting to the back. And I stretched out in her seat. And I had the ride of my life. I was a deathmatch champion. And I had the ability to make people sick.
Next week, the metamorphosis is complete as Mankind impacts the WWF.
Every time I put on the mandible claw, in my mind, that's Vince McMahon, and I'm saying, why didn't you take me when I was good? Why didn't you take me when I was young?
Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, Mankind, three bizarre yet distinct personalities. Each one scarred by trauma and suffering. Each one still haunted by the pain.
Why didn't Cactus Jack ever come to the WWF?
Because he wasn't welcome.
I would have set the WWF on a gear. So when you look at Mankind, you're saying to somebody, every time I put on the mandible claw, in my mind, that's Vince McMahon, and I'm saying, why didn't you take me when I was good? Why didn't you take me when I was young? That's where the mandible claw comes from. It's power tempered with mercy, just like me.
Earlier you mentioned Shawn Michaels and how you would like to see Shawn Michaels end his career handing out change in an arcade. Why the Venom?
Shawn Michaels, remember they were saying that at one point, Shawn Michaels, a boy in his dream. I wonder, Jimmy, why didn't they ever say Mick Foley, a boy in his dream? We had the same dream. So why does he look like he does? And why do I look like this? You think that's unfair to want me to wish him a lifetime of misery? I don't think that's unfair at all. I think it's a perfectly logical thing to ask. And I'm not ashamed. I wish him and a lot of the WWF superstars nothing but personal trauma and tragedy in their personal and professional lives. Does that make me a bad person? I want the suffering to be on the other side. And I'd like to cause it. Because that, to me, is a nice day.
Have you ever been treated or have you ever been diagnosed with a multiple personality disorder?
You know, I thought we talked about this when I said I don't believe in doctors. I believe in the body's ability to heal itself. If there's something wrong with my mind, I think I'd be the first one to know.
Don't you think that it's about time in your life where you looked squarely in the mirror and accepted the personal responsibility for who you are? Don't you believe that you, yourself, have caused and brought on all these problems?
I think it's time for you to maybe start doing your damn job. I think it's time for you to end this facade of journalistic integrity. You know what you tell the people week in and week out? You say, look at Mankind. I don't even know if he feels pain or maybe he likes pain. You see, you're a powerful man, Jimmy. You have got the ability to reach a lot of people, to spread the truth, and you neglect to do it. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. What is it about pain that I love? You see, I feel just like every other person. You see that? It hurts. Is it when I can't get up, when my little boy says, Daddy, I want to play ball, and I can't do it? Is that where the fun starts? Is it where a doctor injects a 12-inch needle into the disc in my spine so I can wrestle one more day? Whoopee! Let the party begin! I can't believe you sit here and ask me those questions. Do I bring it on to myself? I haven't done a damn thing to you. All you've done to people is mislead them and let them think that I'm having the time of my goddamn life when I'm in pain. Don't you look at me with that smug look. You make me sick. A man of integrity. I want to smack you. Jimmy? Jimmy.
Help.
He's gonna need some help.
Okay, once again, I love that. So far, I mean, we have, Blair was on last show, and Foley also had an interview on last show.
Yeah.
Just showing these guys' depth. Mm-hmm. There'll be a few others here that will be on. So let's do another one that was on last
show. Rhino was on last show?
No. But I think he has a better promo than people realize. I just think, I mean, that's obviously the one which stands out for me, but I think he was. But let's go on to somebody else that had a promo on last one. It was near the end, and it was a funny promo. This promo is also hilarious, but in many ways, I think it does a better job of setting up the actual match, and that's Kurt Angle, Sexy Boy. Kurt Angle.
Always. Yes.
Sherry Martel. Singing, he's a sexy boy. I've got a gold medal. You know, setting up their WrestleMania match between him and Michaels at WrestleMania 19, was it?
No, 19 was Jericho.
It was 21.
21. That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, 21. Yeah, right. Right, 19 was Jericho, his first one back. So, yeah, WrestleMania 21. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so damn entertaining that you almost didn't want to like him, but he still managed to get underneath your skin. You know, you almost wanted to like him, but he still managed to get underneath your skin, and it's against Shawn Michaels, and it's just really, nobody like Kurt Angle could be this silly and yet still kind of seem legitimate because you know how tough he really is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right, well, let's go to that one.
And the return of two of the most controversial, say what you mean, superstars in WWE history. Rowdy Roddy Piper hosts Piper's Pit. It becomes a rattlesnake pit with Stone Cold Steve Austin involved at WrestleMania.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see that.
Wait a minute. That's Kurt Angle. What is this all about?
Now that's how you do an entrance. People, from the start, I said that I would outdo Shawn Michaels. And I proved that I was a better athlete. And tonight, I'm going to prove that I'm a better entertainer as well. Now with me is a woman who turned Shawn Michaels from a nobody to a somebody. Shawn Michaels' first manager, the beautiful, sensational Sherry. Now, Sherry, we all know that you helped out Shawn quite a bit earlier in his career, but obviously, I didn't need anyone's help when I won the Olympic gold medal, but that's beside the point. The point is, your influence on Shawn still lives today. Every time HBK's music is played, everyone around the world knows that it's your voice, Sherry, that's screaming Shawn Michaels' name. Now, me personally, I think that song sucks. No offense. I mean, Shawn Michaels thinks he's so great because he sang his own song. Well, Shawn, as I've been telling you, anything you can do, we can do better. Hit the music.
What does he mean by that?
I think I'm cute. I got the metal. I got the move that makes them all tap out. The angle slam. The angle lock. Marty Jannetty. Still can't walk. I'm just a sexy girl.
Sexy girl.
I'll make your ankle hurt.
Ankle hurt.
I'm just a sexy girl.
Sexy girl.
I'll make your ankle hurt.
Ankle hurt.
Woo. That's right, Shawn. Eat your heart out. Hands out the merchandise.
guys. Woo! That's tremendous, Cole. I mean,
tremendous.
Come on. Kurt Angle's. That's Kurt. That was phenomenal.
Yo. Up here. Kurt. I know I'm sorry to interrupt the big party, but hello, Sherry. You know, I have to say, you look as beautiful as ever, and that's not true, really. You don't look that good. But anyway, you know, last week.
Yeah, we're back.
We are back.
All right, how many more you got?
1, 2, 4.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6. Should we, the question is, do we split this into two parts?
We could.
You want to do, I'll do one more.
Yeah, you do one more, and then, yeah, that's
fine. And then we'll call it a day here on this one, and we'll go into the second part.
Okay.
So let's talk about, this is one that I came up with here last second, then, because we already did, well, no, we won't do another one with that guy, because we already did one.
Great.
Let's talk about, no, okay, here's one.
Good thing we held on for you here, I'm glad.
Well, let's talk about Dusty.
Can we talk about you being prepared?
Let's talk about Dusty Rhodes, because he is one of the all-time greats, right? And there's so many
the Playboy.
Quotable. One of the so many quotable Dusty Rhodes. If I say to you a Dusty Rhodes promo, give me a quote. You can do it almost immediately.
Oh, but, yeah.
Dusty Rhodes, give me a quote.
You can beat our prices, but you sure can't beat our meat.
Americana Butcher Shop.
Yes.
WWF, introduction videos. Do another one. Give me another one.
That's hard times.
WCW, him and Ric Flair.
That's NWA, really, I think.
That's NWA,
yeah.
You're right. That's NWA. Another one.
Hmm? No.
Oh, okay. The point is, though, there's all these ones you're going to pull out that are so damn quotable. But this one is almost forgotten about, but it's a really great interview. And when you do most of his, in fact, I don't think anybody quotes any of his ones from his time in the WWF, from his tenure in the WWF. I mean, the one you...
Americana Butcher Shop.
That's not the scene, and that's a introduction video. It's not a promo.
It's a vignette.
As far as an actual promo that he cuts, I'm going to go with the one that he does right after a Million Dollar Man buys out Sapphire.
Mm.
He comes out on Superstars and cuts just a tremendous promo, about the loss and what Million Dollar Man did and about Sapphire. And I think he really gets the character there. And, again, it's not memorable enough, and maybe it's because it doesn't have one of those quotable Dusty lines.
Yeah.
But what it does have is great Dusty delivery and psychology.
Does he call her a cunt?
It's a promo by Dusty, not Addy.
Oh.
And
The
Canadian dream. On that one, we're going to end this one. We'll come back with part two.
There's a look at the 1991 World Wrestling Federation calendar. And on the cover, World Wrestling Federation champion, the Ultimate Warrior.
And you don't want to forget in that calendar, Hot Rod Don Marks. Now, they tried to get Plumber Love in there, but it took August, July, September to get him on the pitch. Couldn't get him all.
Brother Sam,
Otto, with an arrogance again.
Mosquito sprayer.
I'm beginning to like it.
Arrogance is going where no other designer fragrance has gone before.
Under your arm?
Pure liquid sex appeal. And you know, Brother Love, as I always say, great men smell great.
He always says that?
Yes!
Yes.
Of course, it does make him smell better.
Brothers and sisters!
Anything makes him smell better.
My guest is a believer!
Canada and a drum would make him smell better.
He used to be a doubter! But now, just like each and every one of you here in this arena, and each and every one of you at home, he now believes that everybody has a price for the Million Dollar Man. He used to be managed by
just a little hurry.
Look. I don't know about that. I think he's a man with a mission. I think he's a man with a purpose.
Wouldn't want to be DiBiase.
Welcome, brother believer. Let me tell you what I believe in. I believe in honor. I believe in integrity. I believe in togetherness. I believe in faith. Faith in my fellow man. And I believe in the good God up above. But most of all, brother love, Ted DiBiase, I believe I'm going to kick your butt.
Oh, my goodness.
Right to the point.
I bet he does, too.
And one other thing, brother love, that I believe in. I believe in the American dream, baby.
The American dream.
Well, that ended far from dashing.
No kidding, right? Hey, how about we go over there and you teach me some of your grooming tips, you know?
Don't breathe on me.
Wait, help a brother out. Man, I raised some weird kids. Mm. I got an idea. Hit the music.
America.
Dash.
He's just a common man.